The Church of England has moved one step closer to the consecration of women bishops during a highly charged debate at its General Synod meeting in the northern city of York this week. A narrowly defeated vote in one of the Synod's three houses of bishops, clergy and laity means there'll be few concessions made to traditionalists who have been strongly opposed to the move. They had hoped for safeguards that would allow them to remain in the care of male-only bishops, similar to the kind of compromise agreement reached when women were first ordained to the priesthood. Pro-women ordination campaigners claimed such concessions would lead to a two-track episcopacy, which could weaken the authority of both male and female bishops. Reverend Jonathan Boardman is Archdeacon of Italy and Malta and a member of the General Synod's House of Clergy. I contacted him on the concluding day of the meeting to find out more about these developments and their implications for relations with other churches.
The atmosphere was extremely charged. I've been a member of General Synod for 5 years, and this was undoubtedly the most emotionally weighty moment of my deliberations. But Philippa, I do need to tell you that although it looks as though we've decided definitively about accepting women bishops, it is important to remember that this is just another stage in a long process of scrutinising draft legislation. And in fact, what we've decided this time is a set of proposals of how to proceed, which are now being passed to the local church, the dioceses of the Church of England, to be discussed at their synods and also at the even more local level of deanery synods.
So in fact, although this was an important milestone, it doesn't mean by any means that it's the end of the debate or that women will be ordained by the end of the year?
Absolutely not. In fact, the very earliest possibility of ordination of women bishops will be in 2014. But it is a milestone in that draft legislation has now passed to a new stage, that the first clause of the legislation is specific in planning for the consecration of women bishops. What has been the main point at issue is the degree to which, within that provision, allowance could be made for those with conscientious objections to receiving their ministry.
As you say, much of the debate has been over this very point, to allow those opposed to women bishops the possibility of some kind of alternative, a sort of compromise measure. But this was very narrowly rejected, wasn't it, by just one of the three houses of Synod?
Yes, it was the House of Clergy within the Synod who voted against an amendment which was tabled by the two Archbishops of the Church of England, the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Archbishop of York, to provide a kind of parallel jurisdiction within dioceses so that where there was a woman bishop, those who were opposed could receive episcopal ministry only from a male bishop acceptable to them, i.e. a male bishop who hadn't consecrated or ordained women as bishops and priests.
And yet this very narrow majority, if you like, against such a compromise shows that it's still an incredibly divisive issue.
Indeed, it is a divisive issue, and that, if you like, is the reason why it was so emotionally charged. Even those who did vote in the House of Clergy have repeatedly said that they don't want to reject the inclusion of those with conscientious objections. And indeed, the draft legislation as it's going forward makes considerable provision and is seen as a compromise from the point of view of those in favour of women's ordination and consecration as bishops. But it's not a compromise that has been identified as sufficient for those with strongly held views in the opposition.
So what reactions do you think are we likely to see from those traditionalists who cannot accept this development?
I think some now will take this as a point at which they truly decide whether to stay or leave the Church of England. And I do think it might mean that the Pope's Anglicanorum Chaetibus proposals of receiving groups of Anglicans into the Roman Catholic Church might have more go in it now. However, there's still a long way to go, and people with conscientious objections tend to be quite resistant and tenacious. I think many will continue to put their point of view across right to the very end. And what's very interesting about those who are fighting to stay, even against their consciences, is the degree to which they identify themselves very strongly as members of the Church of England. And even if from a traditionalist Catholic position within the Church of England, they don't identify themselves yet as Roman Catholics.
Now, both Rowan Williams, as you said, and John Sentamo, the Archbishops of Canterbury and York, had supported some kind of compromise proposal, which was defeated. Does this therefore weaken their position of leadership now?
The Archbishop of Canterbury, in his presenting of the amendment, said that it was in no way a test of loyalty. And in fact, it's interesting that in the House of Bishops, 15 bishops out of 40 voted against the Archbishop's amendment. That's clearly, they still had a majority in that House, but 15 is a significant number of bishops to decide not to vote with the Archbishops. The Archbishops have a particular duty to try and seek unity, and they were doing that in relation to their amendment, I think. They have undoubtedly been seen to be acting in a way which was caring of the conscientious objectors, if you like. And I think that will, in the long run, assist them in future conversations with them.
What about the ecumenical impact of this decision on relations, particularly with the Catholic and Orthodox worlds? I mean, was there much discussion of this at all in Synod this time?
It's a very interesting question, because actually procedurally, during consideration of legislation at the stage we've got to in this debate, the ecumenical observers aren't actually, by standing order, permitted to speak in debates, which is a great shame, because they all have, both from the Catholic and Orthodox side and from the Reformed Church's side, have much to contribute. However, they had been consulted before we got to this stage, and indeed in the Roman Catholic world, Cardinal Casper made a number of interventions, both to the House of Bishops of the Church of England and at the Lambeth Conference, dealing with this subject, in which it was made quite clear that if we ordained women bishops at all, this would be a further obstacle to organic unity with the Catholic Church. However, what I would also say importantly is that if we do ordain women bishops, which we are now set to do, it would be more important to keep a way of ordaining them which was more consonant with ecclesiology of the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Churches for our women bishops. And in that respect, that would argue against giving too many compromises and allowing too many conscientious objectors, because in fact, Catholic-minded supporters of the ordination of women as bishops say it's important that the role of the bishop is not damaged and their authority and their service to the Church in being a focus of unity. And therefore, that's why women have to be bishops, simply that, and not be compromised bishops.
I think these latest developments will help to focus very seriously the minds of those who are being drawn to represent both the Anglican Communion and the Catholic Church within the ARCHIC 3 talks.
Monsignor Andrew Faley is Assistant General Secretary in charge of Ecumenical and Interreligious Relations at the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. He told me while these latest developments represent a significant setback to the goal of full visible unity between the churches, they may also bring a greater clarity to discussions between the denominations.
I think the reaction will be very measured in terms of England and Wales. The bishops here are generously and wholeheartedly committed to ecumenical relations with all the church traditions within these two countries. And I see no change in terms of their continuing to relate very generously towards their episcopal colleagues within the Church of England for the future. And that will be symbolized very richly during Pope Benedict's visit to these countries, to the United Kingdom, in September, when our bishops will meet with their Church of England bishop colleagues in Lambeth Palace.
So you wouldn't agree with those who are calling this another cloud on the horizon, another milestone, if you like, taking us further away from any hopes of visible unity?
Oh, no, I think it is a cloud on the horizon. I would say that it's nearer to us than the horizon, in that the way the Church of England is debating and drawing up its legislation in order to accommodate women within the episcopacy is, I think, changing the Church of England's understanding of itself as a church. That is a much more fundamental concern and worry for us as Catholics relating to Anglicans ecumenically. And I think we have to wait to see how that moves through the Church of England's discussions. But it seems to me to be a very clear cloud on the horizon.
What impact do you think this will have on those who are considering taking up the Pope's offer, Anglicanorum Chaetibus, the personal ordinariate?
I think Anglicanorum Chaetibus, recognising the generosity of the Holy Father towards those Anglicans around the world within groups who wish to seek full communion with the See of Peter will continue to be attractive to those here in our countries of England and Wales, especially as our bishops have already made clear that they will provide generously for those groups of former Anglicans. And I think the current situation within the Church of England will make some people think very carefully about what that offer will provide for them in terms of security and stability for their own lives as Christians within full communion as Roman Catholics with the See of Peter and, of course, with the bishops here in England and Wales.
Although you've said previously that this offer from the Pope is not to be seen as some kind of escape hatch simply for those who can't cope with the idea of women as bishops.
That's right, and it is not an escape hatch, and I stand by that phrase. The reality of the Ordinariate is recognising the generosity of what the Pope is providing within the Catholic Church, having reshaped the Catholic Church to provide that space for those who see the full nature of the Church to lie within the Catholic Church. And I think that always remains much more important as the issue that draws people into communion with the Catholic Church than feeling disaffected for one reason or another with what their Church may be doing. But I still come back to the point that I think that in my understanding of what is happening within the Church of England, the way it's dealing with the provision it's making for women as bishops within the Church of England is at a much deeper level changing, I think, what the Church of England understands itself to be as a church.
During his last visit here to Rome, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Archbishop Rowan Williams, urged his Catholic listeners at a lecture at the Gregorian University to actually consider this issue more deeply, to consider the Catholic Church's own attitude towards these issues of authority and identity, and to consider whether perhaps this issue of ordination of women is not something of first order within the Church, but something that can be debated even within the Catholic Church. What was your reaction to that?
I think it was a very interesting and helpful distinction between first and second order issues as the Archbishop reflected on them within that lecture within the Gregorian University. However, I still think the more deep concern I have, and I think many Catholics would have, is how we understand the Church, what we understand the Church to be. And that debate, which Cardinal Casper brought particularly into focus in his contribution in his lecture to the House, the Church of England House of Bishops some years ago, which he reiterated during the Lambeth Conference of 2 years ago, and which Cardinal Murphy O'Connor also focused on in his address to General Synod 2 Februarys ago, still continues, I think, to be the more serious, I might use the phrase, first-order issue, what it means to be the Church. And that, it seems to me, is something that the debate around the ordination of women as bishops needs to be returned to very seriously within the theological reflections that the Church of England, I think, still needs to take forward within its own debates. It's not just about legislation, it's about what it means to be the Church.
My thanks there to Monsignor Andrew Faley, Assistant General Secretary in charge of Ecumenical and Interreligious Relations at the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. And earlier you heard Reverend Jonathan Boardman, Archdeacon of Italy and Malta and a member of the General Synod's House of Clergy.